Reverend Joseph L. Wagner of Birmingham, Alabama. First, we will give you a little bit of background information. Pastor L. Wagner's trip here is sponsored by the Pantata Esna Committee for this year. The goals of Pantata Esna this year, as all of you know, is to help the newly acquired school, the newly acquired synodical school in Selma, Alabama, through our prayers and through our contributions. So far this year, our funds have gone for lounge furniture in a newly remodeled boys' dormitory and for financial aid to students at the school. I first contacted Pastor L. Wagner in the middle of January, and I had very little contact with him before that. He had written an article in Concern, the mission magazine. But since that time, I think we all have heard of Pastor L. Wagner as chairman of the Concerned White Citizens of Alabama and for his work as a civil rights leader. I will give a little history of Pastor L. Wagner's life. He was born in St. Louis. He attended high school in Selma, Alabama, where his father was the president of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College. He graduated from this seminary in 1957. His STM thesis was entitled Racism and the Christian World Mission. He has served in St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Birmingham since his finishing his studies here in 1958. He is also chairman of the Birmingham Council on Human Relations and is a board member of the Lutheran Human Relations Association of America. He has had articles in Concordia Theological Monthly and the Crescent. His father, as I have said, is president of the school in Selma. A brother, John, is pastor of the Lutheran Church of the Redeemer in Columbus, Georgia. And a brother, David, is Assistant Attorney General of the state of Alabama. At this time, I'll present to you Pastor L. Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Latch. Esteemed brothers and fathers of the clergy, students and friends of Concordia Seminary, it's always a pleasure, a privilege, and an honor to be invited back to one's alma mater, to know that one is not a disgrace, but might have a word to say, and maybe a word in helping to shape the future ministry of our church. And I appreciate this opportunity and the invitation extended by Pantata Esna. 3 years ago, if I had stood here to talk to you about Alabama Lutheran Academy and College in Selma, Alabama, I don't think that I would have quite as many people sitting in front of me, and certainly not very many sensitive ears. Many perhaps would have had difficulty even thinking about the Academy and College in Selma and wondering where Selma, Alabama is. Today, the situation is quite different. Since the taking over of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College by Missouri Synod after the Synodical Conference abandoned this work to Missouri Synod in 1962, the clergy and the lay people of Missouri Synod have been asking the question, well, what really is the present and the future role of the Academy and College in Selma? And now that Selma has been the center of civil rights demonstrations for the last 3 months, no one asks the question, where is Selma, Alabama? And so I speak to what I think are some very eager and sensitive ears and hearts this morning, and I pray that I will have something significant to share with you and some answers to some of your questions. Since I was asked 3 months ago to speak on the Academy and College in Selma, this is the real heart of my message this morning. I shall try to make it brief because I feel that there might be a few questions on a few other matters concerning Selma. I come to this issue this morning of the present and future role of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College in Selma, with no presumption of final divine authority in this very difficult, complex issue. Certainly, I am not an educator with a great deal of background in this field, and this requires a good deal of educational background and skill to answer a question on the role of a school, and particularly whether or not a school should be a preparatory school in our Missouri Synod system. I certainly have had no special visions on this matter. My views today are hammered out over a long period of experience, inner struggle, questioning, conversation with fellow ministers, fellow members of the body of Christ in my congregation and throughout the Southern District. However, I do not apologize for coming to you to speak to this particular issue. I lived in Selma for 13 years, now in Birmingham for 7 years. I have preached in almost all of the churches in Dallas and Wilcox County from which the students at Alabama Lutheran Academy and College come largely. My father, as has been stated, has been president of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College. I think I should qualify that. He had a heart attack in November, and he is no longer even acting president of the college, but rather Professor Varn Stringer is acting president. But in view of the fact that my father had been president for 20 years, ever since 1945, the life, the problems, the successes of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College were daily conversation in our home. And so what I speak about today is not something that I learned from books, but something that has been very close to my life and existence. And certainly I bring to this issue a deep concern for the body of Christ in the South, that it be the presence of Christ relating the message and the love of Christ to the entire life of all of the people of this part of our country. And I am very much concerned about the ministerial ability and approach to the ministry in the South. I want positively to acknowledge the very definite and positive role of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College in the life of our church since its founding in 1922. I believe that the dedication of many of the professors, teachers, Negro and white, and many of the alumni of Alabama Lutheran Academy and College, now pastors and lay people, that all of this speaks for a mission that has been accomplished by this school in the life of the church. And so what I say today is not in any way deriding the positive good that has come from this school, but we would be sentimentalists if we would say that we have no right and no responsibility to stand back and ask, now at this point, 1965, what is the role of this school? I would remind you, in case there are some who don't read periodicals that are put out by the students on the campus, I remember in my day that was one of the frustrations of being an editor of a magazine on this campus, that students didn't read the magazines we printed. So there is an issue of concern, November 1964, that has three articles, one on the history of the Academy and College in Selma, two, from varying points of view on what the future role of the Academy and College should be. I suggest that you read this because I am not going to read any of these articles, though I was tempted to do so because I wrote one of them, but I shan't do that. And instead, I shall give as quickly as possible my views on the future role of the Academy and College in Selma. There are three distinct possibilities as to the future role, and of course there are variations of these three, but I think that there are these three basic possibilities. Number one, there have been, for some time now, people who have been saying that the Academy and College should be closed. And these have not been dupes. These have not been bitter people. These are people, many of them Negro and many of them white, who simply believe that a segregated, de facto segregated institution has no more future in our system. Number two, there is certainly the likelihood and the possibility that Alabama Lutheran Academy and College would become a full-fledged preparatory school alongside of all the other prep schools. The third possibility is that it would not be a full-fledged prep school, but a feeder school, a high school with remedial training and preparation for entrance into the other preparatory schools. And the position that I take is that this last possibility is the most plausible and the most feasible and the most constructive as far as the future of the ministry of our church is concerned in the South, in the nation, and in the world. And I would suggest three reasons for my position. First, I am very much concerned that if Alabama Lutheran Academy and College must continue as a de facto Negro school for Negroes in the South, and particularly the plantation belt of Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, if this must continue for 5, 10, 15 years as a de facto segregated Negro school, this says something to Negroes and whites in the South that I am very much concerned that the church, the body of Christ, not say. Although there are some Negroes, Negro Lutherans in the Wilcox-Dallas County area who have grown up with this, they're third-generation Lutherans. They like the academy. Their children have gone there. They appreciate it. They are so sentimentally attached that they would not consider the idea of reducing this simply to a feeder high school. The thinking Negro of the South, Lutheran and non-Lutheran, Christian and non-Christian, looks at Alabama Lutheran Academy and College, and it asks, why did a church body that has many white Lutherans in the area found a school that is obviously founded for the purpose of serving Negroes, to help Negroes, period? And there is only one conclusion that you can come to, that the school was founded because the church body that founded it felt that Negroes demanded a special brand of education and that somehow they were not to be educated along with the rest of the students and the rest of the pre-ministerial, pre-teaching, training students of our church. It is a symbol of the foreign mission policy that the Synodical Conference operated on in its mission to Negroes in the South and across the nation until 1945, when changes occurred and it was agreed that these Negro churches were to become a part of the mainstream of the church. And so, my concern is that this symbol of paternalism and foreign mission policy not continue. And unless there is a realistic possibility that the Academy and College in Selma become a fully integrated institution within a matter of 2 or 3 years, that the continuation of such a symbol at such a time when Negroes and whites need to see that the church, the body of Christ, does not operate on racial lines, that this kind of symbol just cannot continue. Secondly, I am concerned about the fact that Alabama Lutheran Academy and College really lowers educational standards of our future Negro pastors and teachers. Not because the teachers aren't doing a good job there, not because there isn't a constant effort to upbuild the academic standards, not because this school is below the other schools and Negro communities in the South. It stands pretty well among the good Negro schools in the South as far as academic attainment is concerned. But I think that it is inevitable that the students who go to this de facto segregated school are being deprived of fulfilling their potential that they could more completely fulfill in a school where they're a part of the mainstream of culture and the mainstream of our church. I say that if a student has been culturally deprived, and certainly this is true of these Negro students from the Black Belt of Alabama, the answer to helping him is not to continue his education in a closed and isolated school. I say the sooner he makes contact with the culture that he's been deprived from, the sooner he makes contact with the mainstream of the church from which he has been isolated, the sooner he will be able to grow from this, the sooner he will be able to compete with the students who have taken for granted the fact that they have grown up in the mainstream of our society and our church. And so I would say that at least at the first year of college, these Negro students must immediately be in the mainstream of our system of education, not in a continuing segregated school. And finally, I believe that the academy and college must become a feeder high school that feeds the other prep schools and possibly a prep school in the southeast. I certainly am very much in favor of this, but this is an issue in itself. I believe that a third concern is that the church needs ministers who can serve anywhere in these complex days, and I do not believe that the school in Selma serves to produce this kind of minister, no matter how hard we try. And here I would like to knock down just a few old misty notions that are more or less taken for granted in this matter of producing able ministers for this our changing and revolutionary age, as it applies to preparing Negro Lutheran ministers. There is the notion that pastors going to Negro communities, urban and rural in the South, do not have to be quite as well prepared as ministers going elsewhere in the nation. We have proved that people and mission executives have operated on this principle by sending white seminarians who seem not quite able to cope with the complexities of the urban life in the North down to the Negro communities in the South. Maybe that's how I got there. Because there they could serve. And we have said that maybe some of the Negro ministers that we have produced via Greensboro are not quite adequate for the real complexities of this age in which we live. But after all, they're going back to Wilcox County in Dallas County, Alabama, and there they don't really have to have all that the rest of the ministers have to have, and their people do not require quite as much of them. I say that this is completely unfounded. If anything, it's the reverse. For a pastor to serve Negro communities in the South, rural and urban, we see the situation in Selma the last few days. For a pastor to be able to face this and say, what does the gospel say to this historical revolution that's taking place in our midst? I say that takes an amazing depth of theology, even theology that perhaps many of us would find it difficult to grapple with. The role of the church in social change, what is it? I say that pastors have got to really have a background and a depth to face the complexities that a minister faces in a Negro community in the South. Or consider the psychological damage that has occurred in the minds and the lives of Negroes living under this oppression for years. For a pastor to understand this and then bring the gospel to bear upon this takes a deep understanding and a deep preparation. If anything, pastors going to Negro communities in the South require an even extra added bit of training. Certainly, they must be as well prepared as every other minister. A second notion that has got to go is the idea that unless Alabama Lutheran Academy and College continues as a prep school, there will be no Negro Lutheran ministers to amount to anything. And here comes the refrain. How many Negroes do we have in our prep schools? And there aren't very many. How many Negroes do we have at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis? How many Negroes do we have at Concordia Seminary, Springfield? A few more there than here. But Not very many. As you take a look at the graduation each year, 1, 2, 3 Negroes a year. And so they say, you see, unless the Academy in Selma really sends them up, 5, 6, 7, 10, a dozen a year, we're not going to have Negro Lutheran ministry. Well, I say that perhaps we haven't tried recruitment and enlistment as we might, but more than that, I think we're operating on a basis of something that we haven't really looked at very clearly. We're assuming that we just ought to be producing about a dozen Negro ministers a year, and we've never asked how many Negro Lutherans are there. There are roughly 25,000 to 30,000 Negro Lutherans. And proportionately, if this Negro Lutheran constituency produces the same number of ministers per year that the white Lutheran constituency produces in our country, it is doing its share if it produces 1 and 2 a year. We are trying to do something artificial here in saying that we've got to produce a half dozen or dozen Negro Lutheran ministers a year. Now, I hope that the time comes mighty soon when this figure of 30,000 Negro Lutherans is old, ancient history, and it's something like 250 or 500,000 Negro Lutherans, but I don't think that's tomorrow. Another false notion that must go, and you see, all of these notions are used to buttress the fact that we must continue a full-fledged prep school in Selma. We must have Negro pastors, so the saying goes, for Negro communities, because only Negro pastors can adequately and effectively work in Negro communities. Well, if that is the case, then I guess I should leave tomorrow, and a lot of other pastors in the South. It certainly is not true, and I don't think we have to belabor this point. White pastors have been very effective in their ministry in Negro communities. Another notion that is accepted many places as fact is the notion that Negro pastors must serve Negro communities, that Negro pastors are always ad infinitum going to be serving in Negro communities, and therefore we don't have to prepare them quite so well. We've talked about that before, but the point is, this is a slightly different point, that Negro pastors are to be prepared to minister in any congregation, any community in this nation and in the world. One of my compatriots in Alabama, a very close friend and one who upholds my arms in my work, is the Reverend Willie Hertzfeldt. By his name, you would never guess that he's a Negro Lutheran pastor. Hertzfeldt isn't exactly what we expect as a label for a Negro, but he is. And he has told me on more than one occasion, Joe, if there's anything I want to be, is a Lutheran pastor able to serve anywhere my church and my Lord. I do not want to be a Negro Lutheran pastor destined to serve only Negro communities and Negro parishes. And this is the young, the thinking Negro who sees that the mission of the church is the world and not Negro pastors for Negro communities. And I say that if we have this new world vision of the ministry, and I would hope that we do, then a de facto segregated school on the college level simply cannot be. They must have from college on the experience with fellow pastors, and future co-laborers. And so I conclude by saying that I believe that Alabama Lutheran Academy and College, if it must be a de facto segregated school for the next few years, and it seems to me it will have to be, should not be a full-fledged prep school, but rather must revert to being a high school that feeds prep schools. I would favor a prep school in the Southeast, possibly Atlanta. But as to the future role of the Academy and College in Selma, for all that it has done for the church, and it has done much, I think that the time has come when it is no longer to serve as a full-fledged preparatory school, and my concern is for the full and complete and able ministry to Christ's body, the church, in its total world mission.
Thank you, Pastor Ellinger. At this time, we will open the meeting to any questions which you may have for Pastor Ellinger. Many of them could. Many of them are going to terminal schools and making the grade, some with difficulty and others with a fair amount of ease. I think the point of your question is, could they bridge the gap from our high school to our preparatory schools? And the answer is, by all means. And my point is that the sooner they get into that system, the better. To wait until they hit the terminal schools, by that time, it may be too much of a gap to bridge. The sooner it's bridged, the easier it's bridged.
Two and a half we have to have sympathy with schools, and the Lord grant that we get away from that, the schools are better.
I'm not trying to belabor the point as to why separate schools were set up. I think this is there's validity in considering this point, but obviously this is past at this point, and now we need to be asking, what about now? And so perhaps we can move on here.
Not really.
Something about the tremendous psychological effect which the whole 200 years in question may have caused the Negroes, or surely did it cause in the Negroes' minds. And yet, we find all, I would think that one of these would be that it has driven them into a loop, more so. And also, we find that now in California, that we're about to go to school, I recommend that it would go to study. Anyone, but it is intended only for white people, he said. And it is not all that far from gold. And I would imagine that the principle on which this has been done is that the fact that you have to bring the school to the places where the Lutherans are if you're going to get sufficient recruitment. And I was wondering there, therefore, if they moved a school without a plan. Building schools in Atlanta would very sufficiently draw from the concentrated Lutheran Negro population in Alabama.
You've got about two or three questions there that I would address myself to. But I'll just take this last question about the question of whether or not a school in Atlanta could draw the concentration of Lutherans from Central Alabama. I think we, again, fail to look at our statistics book. How many Negro Lutherans are there in Central Alabama? We talk about this great deal, and I'm not belittling the work that's been done and the field that's there, but it's something like 2,500 Negro Lutherans in the state of Alabama, and most of them are in Birmingham and Mobile in urban areas, not around Selma. These people have moved out. Detroit, Cleveland, what have you. And this is one of the factors that I didn't mention in my presentation. But this is not the center of, quote, Negro Lutheranism. Even if you want to talk about such an animal, it isn't the center of Negro Lutheranism anymore. It once was, but now the future are the numbers of Negro Lutherans are in urban areas. But then the second point is, again, we're begging the issue. The issue is not these 25 rural Negro congregations in Wilcox and Dallas County representing maybe 600 communicants, but the issue is, how can we raise up a ministry in the church that can cope with the complexities of this world? And the whole region of the South has need for a school, not just a school for Negroes in Wilcox and Dallas County, but a school serving the entire area. The church's mission is to all of southeastern United States, not just the Negro communities in Dallas County. With this broader view, yes, a school in Atlanta will draw Negro and white Lutheran students from all over the Southeast. Mr. Barr? We have just left Alabama Lutheran Academy and College. Well, I'm going to surprise you by saying that Dr. Edgar Homerichthausen, better known to us in the Southern District as Ed, is much closer and on a much more brotherly and fraternal basis than you would get with me. And definitely there is an agreement on goals and a disagreement on methods. You ask, well, to what extent is there validity in this disagreement? And I would say, well, obviously, wherever Christians are honestly struggling with the question, what is the role of the church? What is the role of the body of Christ in the midst of social change? If there is an honest wrestling, and these are honest answers, not answers determined by the white majority and their feelings, but answers determined by what is God's will for me and for the church at this time, certainly we ought to honor and respect these decisions and these conclusions. The only concern that I would have is that whatever we say and do as pastor, layperson, or as leader, in no way give the appearance that the church is not concerned about lifting the oppression of people, an oppression that the church has had a part in, both by its activity, its obvious segregation in its own life, and its silence in the midst of all of these injustices. I say, for the church to give any impression that we are not concerned about the lifting of the oppression, and that we're not concerned about an historical movement that is truly American, religious in its roots, more indigenous than any movement toward freedom in our whole country, for the church to give the impression that we have nothing to say here and that we're even opposed is a very dangerous thing that says to the oppressed, we're not concerned about your oppression, and it says to the oppressor, go ahead oppressing. And this is the only thing that I'm concerned about. Honest differences of opinion, where there's an honest struggling with the soul and with God, this I think is not only to be granted, but I should hope that we would be able to live as brothers, as Dr. Homerichthausen and I certainly are.
Dr. Zone? I'm glad you brought up this point. I certainly did not want to imply that the continuation of a de facto segregated school in Selma means that those who are fostering this and continuing this want segregation or want the lower standards of education that simply must accrue from this kind of situation. What I am saying is this, that for us to say that theoretically this is
an integrated institution just doesn't say anything. It doesn't speak to the issue. The issue is that here are Negro students whom we want to be ministers of the gospel, able to do a good job anywhere in the world. They have been culturally deprived. What they need is the opportunity to be a part of the mainstream of our church and society, and it doesn't do any good to continue a segregated school and say, but theoretically it is an integrated institution. They still are not a part of this mainstream that they must be a part of, the sort of thing that we again take for granted. And that's not to in any way impugn anybody's motives for continuing this thing. The matter of making it an integrated school, and this has been talked about practically by many people, obviously no one can prophesy, but I just don't think this is realistic. I don't think we can integrate Selma the other way around, bringing in whites, within the next 10 years for several reasons. First of all, this is not a Fisk University, a Talladega College, a Howard University, a Tuskegee Institute. If it were, I think there would be some possibility of this kind of reverse integration. But anyone who's been to the academy and college there knows that really, to be honest, with a full-fledged preparatory school would take a completely new campus and a completely new beginning. I'm just afraid that with what we have, it's going to be difficult to integrate in reverse. Secondly, the white Lutherans in the southeastern area have grown up with a psychology that has said all these years that the academy in Selma is for Negroes. And they have grown up in a southern climate that has said not only is this academy in Selma for a Negro, but we would be lowering our educational standards and everything else to go. And in other words, everything psychologically, culturally, and climate of the church-wise says that it's going to be very difficult, realistically, to integrate the school in Selma. And I'm saying, now, if it were possible, good. But if it isn't possible, let's not go on for another 10 or 15 years saying that, well, theoretically, it's integrated when the students who are there have got to have a chance to be a part of the mainstream.
Back there. This is a real good suggestion and a real possibility that if this were to be a high school feeding preparatory schools, it might also take on the added dimension of being a school that would work hard in doing what we say we want to do, serve the Negro in this area, and that is help him to gain some of the skills that he's got to have if he's going to walk through the doors that are opening now in employment. So the simple thing of preparing some of these kids around Selma, Wilcox, and Dallas County to honestly be able to type and do secretarial work would be one of the best things we could do for these people. And in that role, the academy in Selma has a real future. What do you mean by summer school? You mean academic classes?
Well, in need of some kind of school or two from there to
the top. So you mean in helping with tutorial work, remedial work? Is that? In other words, not going for your own academic benefit, but for the sake of helping with an academic program, tutoring and remedial work. Well, this is a real possibility, and it could be a real avenue of service. Many northern colleges and universities are doing this sort of thing strictly from the humanitarian motivation, and there is definitely a need to help tutor these culturally, academically deprived, isolated kids. There's no question, but what it could be, a real avenue of service, it would require a great deal of careful planning and preparation, and would definitely require the cooperation of the faculty at the school in Selma.
What would be your presentation representing your point of view over in the official plan of the Missouri Senate?
Good question. Well, I must be honest in saying that I suppose the official position at this point is that the school in Selma should become a full-blown preparatory school, although there's been a great deal of struggle in this thing, as men honestly ask the question, what is best for the church at this time and this place? And they would be the first to admit that even though they're leaning in this direction, they are not that absolutely positively sure of the direction they're going in. I hope I'm not reading too much into their thinking, but I believe that the struggling in this thing that I have seen during the past two or three years indicates that there is a real, this is a knotty question. I said at the beginning that I do not propose that this position of mine is the final answer, and I do not propose or presume to be an authority because of certain lacks that I have in my background, but I certainly feel that this is a voice that had better be reckoned with and a position that had better be honestly faced, because it springs from an experience with, if I may use the term, the new thinking generation of Negroes, which is not the kind of Negroes you talk to when you go down to Wilcox and Dallas County, and I'm afraid this is the kind of Negro and this is the kind of Negro pastor that we find represented in a large share of the congregations in Alabama. And when you talk to them, you get a completely different picture, but this is past. And I feel that this view springs from this particular environment is one that had better be reckoned with, or we're going to be making a solution to a problem on terms of ancient history and instead of modern.
One more question. Professor Danker?
It's a miracle. So for anyone who's lived in the environment of the South, this really is an amazing thing. It was 72 and 12 more, 72 white Alabamians who took a direct action demonstration, made a direct action demonstration in protest against the injustices, and mind you, this was one of the most significant messages of what we did that day, and this was one of the hardest things for the whites of the South to take. We were identifying ourselves with the Negro movement. We were saying that these Negroes who have put their lives on the line to get what we as a nation have promised them all along are not radicals. They are not revolutionaries in the bad sense. They are not un-American, they are not un-Christian, quite to the contrary, we, responsible citizens of Alabama, many of us Christians, are saying that what they are asking for is a legitimate cry, and we are with them. And this was a hard thing for white Alabamians to say, because the majority of whites do not like to face this as a legitimate movement that they have to honestly face. This is why you hear all of the scum of attacks on it, that these are communists and left-wingers and convicted felons and sex perverts and what have you, because if they can convince themselves that that's the kind of movement it is, then they don't have to face what it's saying, namely that there are injustices that have got to be changed. And so I still marvel at how 72 white persons, in the face of all of this hostility in the white community, were willing to do this. Humanly speaking, I would say that there were a couple of important factors. The Central Core Group in Birmingham, had been meeting over a period of years as the Birmingham Council on Human Relations, an integrated group. We had tried many things. We had talked with officials. We had written letters to the editor. We had done everything but direct action demonstration. We felt the frustration of talking to these people who either would kick us out of their office or would smile and say nice things and absolutely refuse to do anything. And finally, we came to this point. Over a long period of honest struggling with the problem, it was not just a bunch of people who got up and emotionally stirred said one day, let's go march. It was a group of people largely who had been working and now were frustrated with the whole system and said, we've got to do something more. And this is what they did. If we hadn't had this intercommunication and this work together and this struggle together, we wouldn't have had the kind of esprit de corps that was necessary to take that kind of action on that Saturday. And I had the easiest position of them all, because I went back to a Negro community where I was received with open arms. They went back to white communities. That took courage. The second question, what did Governor George Wallace say yesterday? This was a significant day. Not from the point of view that we changed Governor George Wallace. None of us expected to do this. But the significance lies in this, that he saw, for the first time, spokesmen of the civil rights movement in Alabama, a movement that to this point he has always been saying is not a genuine call and cry of an oppressed people. But he has always been getting it off his back by saying it's outside agitation, distortion of the news by the mass media, and what have you. But by receiving us, he said, there is something legitimate. Maybe he didn't realize he was saying this, but this is what he was saying. And I don't think that Governor Wallace will be quite the same man that he has been up to this point, because he saw the leaders of the civil rights movement in Alabama as people, not as bulls with horns. And that's the picture that you get sometimes when you're on the other side of the wall. But he saw these people who talked to him, and I'm just going to mention a couple to show you what kind of representation it was that was willing to say that we're going to speak for this movement, and we're with it. Dr. Foster, president of Tuskegee Institute. Mr. A.G. Gaston, Negro millionaire and businessman with enterprises all through the South. Dr. Gilliard, dentist in Mobile. Dr. Gomillion, outstanding sociologist and author from Tuskegee Institute. Reverend T.Y. Rogers, a very progressive and theologically rooted minister in Tuscaloosa. And Mrs. Amelia Boynton, a woman who owns her own insurance agency and ran for the state senate in Alabama in the last election, several Negro attorneys. This was the group that went to see him. And he couldn't quite say that this whole movement is nothing but the feelings that outside agitators have stirred up. Here were Alabamians saying that we are indignant at the injustices, and we expect you, our leaders, to make changes. Now, I don't expect any drastic change in Governor Wallace's approach, but I say that unless he comes out and tries to attack us now and say that after he's talked with us that this group is not a responsible group of citizens, now, if he does that, then, of course, he's got the thing off his back. But if he doesn't, then he has said by his meeting with us that he has got to face what this movement is saying. And that's something that he and the official power structure in Alabama and the white society in general has not wanted to say up to this point. So I think that's the significance of it. I think at this point we'll have to stop.